Paid for by IMIC Incorporated.
The Cure with Amy Cabo is brought to you by IMIC Research. Life can bring many difficult situations, domestic violence, addictions, poverty, and even sexual abuse by your loved ones. Welcome, Amy Cabo and The Cure.
Good afternoon, and thanks for joining us today. This is The Cure, and I'm your host, Amy Cabo, with Dr. Boris Nikolov, always by my side.
Hi.
I created this show as a safe space to show that there is hope after going through difficulties, or no matter what you've been through, no matter what type of suffering you're going through. And we're here to help, and we're trying to use testimonies so that other people know they're not alone and that we can be there for each other. We also invite professionals and motivational speakers that can give suggestions and can help us, as well as us helping each other. Because April is Child Abuse Prevention Month, we've discussed a lot of topics about abuse. We've also discussed topics about post-traumatic stress disorder, available treatments, how to prevent it, how to overcome it, other mental health problems, and many others. Basically, if you're suffering from everything, there's maybe a way that we can help. As a survivor, I hope to inspire others, encourage transparency, and find strength in knowing that those who suffer are not alone, and that those who heal insurmountable odds do exist. Like, for example, I am a survivor, an adult survivor of long-term childhood abuse of all kinds, sexual, emotional, and physical, several rapes, addiction, domestic violence, followed by 14 years of custody battles, poverty, loss, near-death experience, and I also know what it's like to almost have a daughter killed, have her endure a severe brain injury, have to bring her back to health, for 3 years, and it's not easy. Then she hates you. So it's not that because I'm here, I don't have problems. Life still goes on, and we all do have problems, but I find myself successful. And that's why I'd like to share my testimony. And success could be something as complicated as a scientific discovery. It's just doing something meaningful. As complicated as a scientific discovery, or as simple as raising your kids or setting a good example. Today, I'd like to speak about addiction and how we can overcome it. And a person that is a good example is today's guest, John Calliope. John Calliope is the author of the book, The Reward of Knowing, which relates his struggles with addiction. John is the owner and broker of Remax Results and his subsequent 38 offices across Minnesota and Wisconsin. With annual sales of more than $5.3 billion, regarding Max Results is now one of the most largest Remax franchises in the world. John currently lives in Minnesota with his wife and children. Hi, John. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Amy.
It's wonderful that you were willing to share with us, because I have my own experience with addiction, and I can tell you that I did try everything, and it was years, and it was very difficult. And it's amazing that you were able to write a book to teach us ways that we can deal with addiction. Can you tell us a little bit about that? For example, let's say a friend might want to help someone, but they're not sure if the person's really addicted on drugs. And I'm speaking about the support system. What can the support system do? How can they pick up on signs that it's actually addiction and they're not imposing on the person?
Well, you've started off with one of the most difficult questions, because it is very, very unusual that you can have an impact on another person's addiction. The problem is, what a person is addicted to or to their level of addiction is hard to ascertain. Now, if you can get them to see a therapist, therapists can be invaluable in doing it. If you can do because of outside things that you've seen or are aware of, violence, arrests, you know, you may be able to do an intervention with a professional. But let me give you an example. A guy who works for me, very successful, played a lot of golf, decided he was drinking too much after golf and he needed to quit. So in his mind, he crossed the line where alcohol was now taking away from his family time. And so the exact opposite would be a person that I know at the Salvation Army who had been to treatment and detox possibly more than 20 times before his brain said, you've had enough. And there's no way to zero in on that with the person that's your friend or family member that you're concerned about. Because even if your observation is clear that there's a problem, they may not be ready to admit it yet. And pointing out the problem is unlikely to have much significance.
I mean, tell me if I'm wrong or not, but I think that most addicts are people that are suffering, that are looking for a way out or a way to escape. And I think the first thing that we have to do is accept the source that's causing this, what's causing our addiction.
I think that what you said has quite a bit of truth to it. There are many addicts who know they're addicts and choose to continue to be addicts, even though they know that it's ultimately going to kill them, just because they prefer the idea of injecting heroin to not. And is it the drug that's making them think that way? You know, quite possibly. But they're also lucid enough to know that they're making a decision that is going to cause them to have a dramatically shorter life or do something that's criminal. And so most people, when they view chemical dependency, they're looking for what caused it. Now, funny thing about that is in the early days of AA, and I'm talking about, you know, the 18-somethings when AA started, there was no desire to know why. The only thing you had to say, I am, and I'm powerless to stop it, and you had to give up to a higher power. And so they didn't look for the reason that much, just I am. People are more introspective. Now, in my personal case, I came from a family that was very dysfunctional. So my dad was chemically dependent and violent, and my mom was just hang around with dad and also abuse alcohol. And so the weird part of things like this, when you look at it, my sister observed this and went, I'm doing that. That's no life for me. And I looked at it, and despite how much I disliked my parents for doing it, you know, I'm using by the time I'm 13. So, oh, darn it, that's hard to figure out where it comes from and how you get started. I think some of it is potentially a genetic code, and I think some of it is learned behavior. And neither of those are I saying factually. Those are just my observations from years of being involved with it and people who are.
Kind of like you don't have to become your environment, pretty much.
Say that again, please.
It's kind of like you don't have to become your environment, pretty much. Just because everyone else is doing it doesn't mean you have to do it. And
no, but you have to admit. Now, so I grew up in a very urban, blue-collar neighborhood. And the theory in the neighborhood I grew up in, that if you could go to work on Monday morning, whatever you did in the weekend was fine. Didn't make any difference if you did the craziest behavior. If you could hold a job, you weren't too far gone. And so if you grew up in a more college-oriented community where a majority of the people are educated, you know, that wouldn't be the same norm. So, yeah, it's hard to figure out where that comes from. But I do think that we observe it. Now, my peer group, the guys that were my buddies, they're nuts. And so guess what I was? Nuts, because I hang around with them. If I would have not went to, you know, if I wouldn't have dropped out of high school and I would have been on my way to going to Harvard, my life would have been different. But it wasn't. So the environment is a big part of what can affect you. Yes, you can make a decision not to do it, i.e. my sister, she didn't go down that route, but I'm dumb. I did.
You're not the only one.
I know that.
I understand exactly what you're saying, because it could be very difficult. I know that I went through many years, and I was very blessed to have a loving support system, somebody that would love me unconditionally and would allow me to realize that what I was doing was wrong on my own. And sometimes that's what it takes. You can't force someone to do something. They have to see the reality for themselves. And so that brings me to this question. What are some tips that you can tell me about how to get an addict to confront their reality and shape you?
That's the catch-22. It's very difficult to do that. Like I said, you can get them to see a therapist. You can get and do an intervention. You can invite them to an AA meeting. But, man, it's so hard because they're just not tuned into that. What's more likely to occur is a friend or family member is going to enable them to continue to abuse drugs or alcohol by, quote, being there for them. How many parents can kick out an 18-year-old who's using drugs and say, you're on your own, kiddo?
Not many.
That's what you got to do. I mean, but that's what you got to do. If the kid's abusing drugs and you're giving him money and a house to do it, you're supporting his addiction as opposed to drawing the line and saying, we're not going to be part of it. But, man, I don't know. That's pretty hard. Anybody who has kids knows that. And an easy thing to do. And so doing what's right with your friends or family or employees that are chemically dependent, very, very difficult.
And John, that comes to the question. I mean, this is a very hard decision to make, because if you have your child abusing and you kick him in the street, what if he overdoses? And then would you feel responsible for what happened to him? I mean, how do you decide when to actually do that?
I guess you don't want to make it easy for him. Maybe threaten, if you're a friend, threaten him that unless he seeks help, you can't be friends with him or her.
Yeah.
Well, if your child is a heroin addict and they die from a heroin overdose, it is absolutely not your fault. It's a choice the child made. And you can love your child at a very high level, but you can't live their life for them. Right. And if they have chosen to have that lifestyle, you can be aware of it, but if you're more likely to have a positive impact by making sure you're not helping them by enabling them and giving them a place to live, instead you go, you're on your own. But if, once again, if the ultimate result in that is something horrific occurs, it isn't the parents' fault. They didn't do it. They most likely tried their best to raise the kid. Were they perfect? No, nobody on earth is perfect. But it's the child's decision to use and abuse drugs that will lead to their downfall. And you know, one of the things that people can do when they have family members and friends suffering from addiction, the wing of Alcoholics Anonymous called Al-Anon is where you go for support with other people who aren't addicts but are faced with dealing with people that are addicts.
And sponsors.
So support group.
Yes, I know what you're talking about, sponsors. And for me, the reason I call this show The Cure is because my sponsor was God. The only time I felt that I completely healed and I was able to do the right thing was when I took God seriously and I started to pray every day. Mm-hmm. But for those that are tuning in, this is The Cure, and I'm your host, Amy Cabo. Where when we return, we'll continue talking about this. Today's show is focusing on overcoming addiction, how to fight it, programs for help. please, if you want, call to share your story. You never know who you might be able to help. Your testimony could be very profound, and it could really help someone that you have no idea. Our number is 305-541-2350. Again, that's 305-541-2350, or if you have a question or you would like to talk to John Calabi. This is I'm So Tired by Love Troy Sivan.
I'm so tired of love songs, tired of love songs, tired of love songs, tired of love. Just wanna go home, wanna go home, wanna go home. Oh, so tired of love songs, tired of love songs, tired of love songs, tired of love. Just wanna go home, wanna go home, wanna go home. Oh, party, trying my best to meet somebody, but everybody around me's falling in love. To our song, I, oh I, yeah, hate it, taking the shot cause I can't take it, but I don't think that they make anything that strong, so I hold on. Songs, tired of love songs, tired of love. Just wanna go home, wanna go home, wanna go home. Oh, so tired of love songs, tired of love songs, tired of love songs, tired of love. Just wanna go home, wanna go home, wanna go home.
Difficult situations, domestic violence, addictions, poverty, and even sexual abuse by your loved ones. The issue is not stay there, but to overcome all obstacles and show that with the love of God, your husband, and your family, you can succeed. Love is the answer, God is the cure, reveals from a very sincere and honest position Amy Cabo's life, a warrior who didn't give up and achieved the dream of her life. You can get to know more about her and her story on www.godisthecure.com or buying her book on amazon.com.
And now we continue with Amy Cabo and The Cure on 880 The Biz.
Welcome back to the show. This is The Cure, and I'm your host, Amy Cabo. Today I'm joined, always, by Dr. Boris Nikolov, and our special guest is John Calabi. You're still with us, right, John? Anyhow, John, I had a question for you because I understand that we should not be silent and we should try to help our friends and try not to add to the problem, of course. But and then if they don't turn to help or they don't see their problem, to threaten them if they don't get help. But it isn't always so simple. What if it's a child and, you know, your child doesn't know any better? And I'm thinking, should that child be confronted individually? When do you know it's okay to confront that child individually or as a group? Because personally, my experience through my years of drug abuse, my husband gave me a home to live in. My psychiatrist called him an enabler. But had he confronted me, it would not have worked. I'll tell you that. Had he tried a group thing, that would not have worked either. I had to come to the realization for myself and see it for myself. And I understand that not everyone can, and sometimes they do need help. Could you tell me a little bit about this?
Well, I think your solution was the right solution for you. But as you said, it's not everybody that's going to be able to be that self-confrontive. The vast majority of people are going to need a support system. And the most successful support system for decades and decades and decades is, you know, becoming involved in Narcotics Anonymous, Alcoholics Anonymous, and finding somebody in the similar place that you can. You mentioned the word before, how some people have success when they have a sponsor in those groups. But one thing that you were talking about that is really hard to focus on, if, for example, when I was 13 years old and I was drinking, and by the time I was 14, 15, I was starting to use drugs, I think if my child did that, I would absolutely confront it, because they're a minor and they live under your house. And I'm going to make it clear that this is not acceptable behavior. And if they're breaking laws, I'm going to find ways to enforce those laws, but I'm going to get them into counseling and a psychologist ASAP. But I'm not going to just shrug my shoulders and go, I guess that happens with teenagers or adolescents. I'm going to be way more confrontive of that. Now, when somebody has an addiction problem who's an employee, I have a weird rule that I call the three strikes, you're out rule.
And so, not very weird.
What's that?
Say, not very weird.
Well, I'm just saying that if I have an employee and something comes up and it's clear they're having a drug or alcohol problem with attendance or behavior, I'll tell them to get help and I'll suggest ways to do it. If it comes up again, I'll tell them to get help and suggest ways to do it. And if it comes up the third time, they'll lose their job. But is that right? I don't know. Well, that's just the way I do it.
That is right.
That's kind.
Some people might fire them the first strike rule.
So tell me, is there ever a time that you should not confront an addict about their problem?
Boy, it just depends upon your relationship. So if I have a guy I grew up with, and, you know, it's 20 years after our teenage years, and he's really in trouble, I don't know if I can have any impact on his life. But I know in the past, I would typically set up a luncheon appointment or a coffee appointment with a good friend who's struggling and just not start in on the chemical dependency issue, but start in, what's going on, man? I've been hearing weird stuff. And then seeing where the conversation goes.
And how do people take it? Do they listen to you or they just leave?
Well, of course, that's an outstanding question, doctor. In my case, because of how crazy I was as a youngster, you know, violent, incarcerated, you know, the different things that happened to me, if it's people that know me, I have a lot of people that have respect for how my life has changed.
Right.
So they're not necessarily going to do anything, but they're going to give me a chance to talk to them. I've never had anybody just tell me to stick it up my you-know-what and walk out the door. I've never had that. I've not had, you know, a miraculous level of success, but most people are willing to hear me out and know that I'm there for only one reason, and that's because I care about them.
That's so nice that you have a good relationship with your employers like that. That's wonderful. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
But the thing is that, you know, work is way more than half of my life that I'm awake. And God darn it, I got to like it, and I got to like the people I work with. And you know, you work with somebody for a long period of time and you develop a different level of caring. And when you see them, you know, risking their family and their career, you step into it. But I have career-adjusted people whose drugs and alcohol severely impacted their performance, and we had them go.
And what did you say? Because obviously everything in our society is based on background checks and situations like that. Would you lobby for employees not to be so strict when they employ people that have a criminal felony, let's say, or of possession or something like that?
Once again, Doctor, just outstanding, because just recently we had somebody apply for a job that had a marijuana felony, and they had some things going for them that we liked in terms of the interviews they had. And so it ends up on my desk, and so I bring, and it happened to be a gentleman, I bring the gentleman in, and what's going on? How did this happen? Where are you at in your life now? And then the question I ask in those particular situations, you know, what's your support system for staying straight? And I did hire the guy.
Like, how did that go?
Nice.
So far, so good. But he's been straight long enough. He had a clear background. He was willing to share with me who his sponsor was in AA if he would talk to his sponsor and his sponsor would agree to it. And so he seemed pretty forthright with me. And so if one of my managers or executives who don't have an experience in chemical dependency, I think they would just wouldn't have hired him because it's too much of a risk. Now, I'm not saying I'm right on the guy, but I think his length of sobriety gives us a pretty good chance to have an outstanding employee.
Yeah,
but
because we should be working on second chances. I mean, this is how a lot of things are based. We should give people a second chance. Good. Thank you.
And that's amazing. I wish more people were like you, because I'll tell you my story. I started when I was very young. I had my daughter when I was a single mother, and it started with Hooters and doing cocaine, and then I would try anything there was, and I was just trying to escape feeling bad, and I did not know why I was feeling bad. I had to get to a point where I was feeling better to realize that I needed not to escape anymore. But it got bad at one point that I even turned to crack. And there was a sting, a DEA sting. They were after the dealer, but they got me. And so I became a felon. And I have, I guess, a criminal record because of it. But I haven't done drugs in many, many years. I've turned my life around. I've turned it over to God. And my kids go to Catholic private school. The last 2 years, of course, part of your kid going to private school is to do angel hours, volunteer hours. And so I did the previous 2 years with the record that I have, of course. Now my daughter, very excited that I wrote my first book ever, distributes my memoir. And guess what? I'm not allowed to volunteer anymore.
That's how it is.
So, you know, I didn't think people use your past against you anymore, but I was sad to say that's not true. So people still do.
The one benefit I had is my criminal activity were gross misdemeanors. The last thing I did was when my last criminal event, I beat a cop up. And I beat him up pretty bad and broke his arm. And so I was looking at prison time, but I had an amazing lawyer who was able to get the judge to put me in treatment, jail first, treatment second, and then eliminate the felony. So I was just flat out lucky that I don't have that. So I think the fact that you've done as well as you have with that, because that is a son of a gun. People aren't very liberal about looking at that. I will hire people with felonies, but man, they're going to get the heck interviewed with them. And there's another person we hired recently that we drug test regularly.
So do you ask him to sign? Like, is that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Okay.
Absolutely. If you're going to come to work for us, here's what we do. And we actually have that in most of our agreements, that we can submit people to drug tests. But this person we were up front with saying, we like your skills, but it's pretty recent that you've suffered problems, and so we're going to want to stay in touch.
That's reasonable.
And I have a daughter with a history of some alcohol problems, and I'm not confident how well she's doing. And we're going to have a little family chat, and I'm going to require her to start doing that because I'm not convinced she quit.
Okay.
That's just me.
Well, that is just amazing. That is wonderful. Thank you. And I was just going to just tell you about that I wanted to share with our listeners. With me, I turned my life over to God. I know that I had to leave the country to get away from crack, but God brought me back, and I changed my life around. And the only way that I was able to feel better about myself, that I would not find a need to escape, it started with prayer. And then I had to change the things I did, how I did them, how I thought. One of the very important things I learned was not to expect anything. And that's what we'll talk about when we get back. For those that are tuning in, this is The Cure, and I'm your host, Amy Cabo. We want to give you the opportunity for you to share your personal story. Please do. I'm sure it'll be helpful to other people. The number is 305-541-2350. Again, that's 305-541-2350. This is Mercy Me by Shawn Mendes.
You've got a hold of me, don't even know your power. I stand 100 feet, but I fall when I'm around you. Show me an open door, then you go and slam it on me. I can't take any more. I'm saying, baby, please have mercy on me. Take it easy on my heart. Even though you don't mean to hurt me, you keep tearing me apart. Would you please have mercy, mercy on my heart? Would you please have mercy, mercy on my heart? I drive the night just to be near you, baby. Heart open, testify, tell me that I'm not crazy. I'm not asking for a lot, just that you're honest with me, and my pride is all I got. I'm saying, baby, please have mercy on me. Take it easy on my heart. Even though you don't my lungs, ripping all the skin from off my bones. I'm prepared to sacrifice my life. I would gladly do it twice. Consuming all the air inside my lungs, ripping all the skin from off my bones. I'm prepared to sacrifice my life. I would gladly do it twice. Oh, please have mercy on me.
Can bring many difficult situations. Domestic violence, addictions, poverty, and even sexual abuse by your loved ones. The issue is not stay there, but to overcome all obstacles and show that with the love of God, your husband, and your family, you can succeed. Love is the answer, God is the cure, reveals from a very sincere and honest position Amy Cabo's life, a warrior who didn't give up and achieved the dream of her life. You can get to know more about her and her story on www.godisthecure.com or buying her book on amazon.com. And now we continue with Amy Cabo and The Cure on 880 The Biz.
Welcome back to The Cure. I'm your host, Amy Cabo. And we were talking about addiction. And I just had something to say. You know, I know that addicts really suffer because I know I did. And you're like, you need to be set free from this. That's why I played that song. You are a puppet on the strings for the drugs. And I remember that even in my highest moments, when I was super high, I would pray to God. I would talk to God. When I was within a group of friends, my Hooter friends, and we were very high, I would talk about God. They would make fun of me. I've always been spiritual like that. So, but God did have mercy on me. He did. I found a way not to feel bad, even before I realized what was the source of it when I wrote my book. And it took me a long time, but I've learned not to expect anything. I have to avoid things that make me feel bad. So if you don't expect anything, you won't be disappointed. Don't expect others to treat you the same way in return. Don't even expect to be treated equally. You won't be disappointed. Don't expect for others to think the same or even understand or even think the way you do. I don't expect to feel better or be happy all day long or to be in a good mood. I don't expect all things to turn out right, but I know I can depend on God if it doesn't. I don't expect my prayers to be answered. God knows the first year of my custody battle, I prayed to God, please take this hell away from me. I had many reasons why I was suffering. But he did, 14 years later. It's all at God's good time. And what if what I'm praying about is not his will? So the only thing I can expect is for me to do the right thing, to love unconditionally, to treat others the way you'd like them to treat you, to be tolerant of differences, to try to be understanding and have compassion, to think of others and be considerate, to be honest, courageous, and hardworking, to be of good cheer despite life getting in the way, life's problems. Take care of all the things you have and learn to appreciate everything. Tolerate your mistakes and the mistakes of others. I've heard people, I know that I would make a mistake in the past and I knew there was a better way to do it. And I would say, oh, I'm so dumb. I can't believe that. I could have said that wasn't the smartest way to do it. But these are things that I realized that I could do to make myself feel better. That if I became the person that I wanted to be, then I wouldn't be upset about myself. So I wanted to ask you about your book. I know that you talk about your struggles with addiction. Can you tell me a little bit about how you were able to overcome it?
In what you just said was so deep. I hope people listen to what you just talked about because it was so insightful on how honest you have to be with yourself. Now, I was in trouble, and I was at the bottom of life. And I've worked with so many chemically dependent people, and it depends upon what your bottom is. But you clearly had reached a point in your life where you wanted something different. And so I was fortunate enough that I was in such a bad situation. You know, my lawyer got me out of prison time. I went to the workhouse. When I was in the workhouse, I was so humiliated by the people that I was incarcerated with, it just made me shake my head and go, how can I make fun of these people? I'm one of them. And I just felt like a doofus and a loser. And then the treatment center after jail gave me a better foundation. And here's something that might find interesting, and some of the listeners might. One of the problems that happens sometimes with some frequency is that people will make a decision to quit their drug or alcohol or both, and it doesn't impact their life much. They're sober, so they're not going to jail, but they're not necessarily doing other behavior changes to feel better about who they are in life.
They haven't found peace.
I was lucky in that sobriety really was meaningful to me. And, you know, using the basis of AA and submitting yourself to your higher power, however you define God in your world, mm-hmm. and releasing that you know you're not in charge of everything going on, mm-hmm. There's a lot of benefit in that. And then here's where I got a break that not everybody gets. My life started to get better because I had never been a sober adult. And so I'm now 23, and my sobriety is allowing me to get a real job. It's allowing me to buy a house. It's allowing me to buy a car. It's allowing me to have the first sober girlfriend of my life. And I liked all stuff. And so that was a really a benefit, because the sobriety was reinforced by an improvement in my lifestyle. And it made me a happier person. Now, as a person who is sober, I have dealt with many adult issues. I had anxiety. I suffer from depression. And I am still battling anger management and you know, see my therapist regularly. So I'm not, like, finished. But, man,
I don't think
I'm better.
We ever are.
I agree. I'm not finished, but man, I'm happy. And so I just got to keep working on these things that detract from my happiness. And that, you know, when I would have road rage and I would beat somebody up along the highway, I would get an exhilaration, but then I'd feel stupid afterwards. And I had to learn to eliminate that stuff. But if I hadn't sobered up, none of those other behavior characteristics could have been worked on, because you got to sober up first before you can work on your other mental health issues.
Oh, and I understand that perfectly. I understand the anger part because I have PTSD. Actually, I have 4 diagnoses. PTSD, depression, major depression, bipolar 2,
right.
ADD. It's all great and fun. Anyhow, I understand that because not so much because of drugs, because I'm not doing drugs at the moment, and I haven't
right.
for a long time, but just little things, little annoyances throughout the day. I tend to, it'll get me angry. And like if everything seems to go wrong, one after the other, after the other, after the other, I'll call my husband and I'll bother him. I'm like, please help me calm down. I can't believe everything's, and I'm talking about things that normally don't happen. If I tell Alexa to play Sirius XM, hits one, she does it. But this time Alexa tells me, I don't know that station in Sirius XM. Or the remote all of a sudden doesn't work. I mean, just things that normally don't happen. If it's things that normally happen, I'm okay with it. But things that normally don't happen, I get a little irritated. Oh, maybe a lot, but I'm working on that.
You know, one of the things you just described, and I was chuckling to myself when you talk about, you know, some of the issues that have, and I use a generic term that may not be very professional, and I go, yeah, you're crazy. and so many of us are, you know, I'm clearly crazy. My only problem is not chemical dependency. That had to be solved before I could work on the other problems. But in terms of learning how to be in a relationship and learning how to talk to people and, you know, once again, dealing with the depression and not being scared to take medication or seeing a psychologist, man, that was all hard for me. But, you know, I'm going in the right direction. I got nothing to complain about.
Great, great. I just wanted to add a few cents. As we know, the addiction is also a disease. It's not just a simple misbehavior. So we really need to work a lot on that, as far as don't just name and label people that use drugs or alcohol, because sometimes it's very hard for them to even stop because it is a disease. Especially
if it's not reinforced right. by circumstances getting better. And I understand exactly what you're saying if circumstances don't get better. But here's the beautiful thing. God has provided us. We are made in the image of Christ. Imagine how perfect our body is. It heals itself. Our minds have an unlimited potential. And you know what? Even if circumstances doesn't change for that person, that we can be there for each other. That person can find someone that will be there for them, that can help them. That's why they're sponsors. And I do believe that God moves these people and that God talks through people and that he helps people, whether or not they feel it, whether or not they know it.
John, I saw something very interesting that you do. I see that you help the community. You founded a foundation. So you're trying to help others. Thank you.
We have an organization in our company called the Results Foundation.
Right.
And, you know, I think last year we sold 26,000 houses in my company.
Nice.
And a portion of every transaction goes to the foundation. We do fundraisers, golfing. We solicit support from communities. And we're up to about a $300,000 a year budget. Now, I set my business up really weird in that I own a mortgage and a real estate and a title company, and I own some real estate. And all of that is going to end up being the property of the Results Foundation. So the charity is going to be funded indefinitely, and my company is always going to stay the same. We're never going to sell it. It's always going to have the same name. But we're going to continue to raise more and more and more money. And my dream is long after I'm long gone, we're putting millions back into the community every year because of the success of our brokerage. So I don't plan on cashing out on my business. I plan on giving back to the community because I'd have nothing if people wouldn't have worked with us. And I really feel very, very positive about giving back. There's an old saying that's pretty corny. That is, the more you give, the more you get. And I'm here to tell you that there's truth in that.
You do get back what you put in. That is so true. Mm-hmm. And if people wanted to know how to get involved in your charity, whether it be volunteering or being part of it or even knowing about your book, I know that you have a website, John Calopy, that's spelled Calopy spelled C-O-L-L-O-P-Y, johncalopy.com. Is there any other way that they can get in touch with you, or that's the main way?
No, that's a good way. The name of my company is Remax Results. It's located in Minneapolis, should say Minnesota and Wisconsin. They can always look me up that way. The book, The Reward of Knowing, is on Amazon, and there's stuff about me and the blurbs on that. You know, if you Google my name, there's all kinds of wacky stuff that pops up about who I am and what I've done. So I'm more than happy to communicate or help with anybody. So if you're a listener and you're going, gee, I'd like a clarification or something, my advice is to get the book. But if you need something that's beside the book, please let me know by email or however you like to communicate, and I'll be happy to reach out to you.
That's wonderful. And also, I'm an addict too. So if anybody would like, I could also be there for them in any way that I can. Now, I don't have a charity. I mean, this is my charity. maybe one day, who knows? I'll keep trying. And but thank you so much, John, for joining us. And it's so nice to know that there's people like you out there that care, that are loving, that give people second chances, that don't hold their past against them, that don't judge them. That is so, so valuable in today's world.
Well, and I think the role that you and the doctor play in being here for people, because I guarantee you there's people listening to this broadcast that are struggling. So congratulations, Amy and the doctor, on what a great job you're doing in helping people. And anything you think I can do in the future, I'd be happy to participate.
Thank you so much, John.
And thank you for having me.
Thank you so much.
Have a good rest of the week.
You too.
Yep.
And guys, we've come again to the end of the show. It's been wonderful spending time with you guys. Thank you for listening. And this is The Cure. I'm your host, Amy Cabo, and I'll leave you with the song Shallow by Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper.
Tell me something, girl. Are you happy in this modern world? Or do you need more? Is there something else you're searching for? I'll fall in all the good times. I find myself longing for change, and in the bad times I fear myself.
Tell me something, boy. Aren't you tired trying to fill that void? Or do you need more? Ain't it hard keeping it so hardcore? I'm falling. In all the good times I find myself longing for change. And in the bad times I fear myself.
Difficult situations, domestic violence, addictions, poverty, and even sexual abuse by your loved ones. The issue is not stay there, but to overcome all obstacles and show that with the love of God, your husband, and your family, you can succeed. Love is the answer, God is the cure, reveals from a very sincere and honest position Amy Cabo's life, a warrior who didn't give up and achieved the dream of her life. You can get to know more about her and her story on www.godisthecure.com or buying her book on amazon.com.
The Cure with Amy Cabo was brought to you by IMIC Research, 786-310-7477 or www.godisthecure.com. Tune in every Friday at 2 p.m. for The Cure with Amy Cabo right here on 880 The Biz.